open.
Blog Talk Radio.
Open the door. And so he did. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Gosh, oh, golly gee. It is so good to be back. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. It's part two of the monsterific weekend. I'm Hale K from Spook Show. Here along with
Dave Binkley from The Weirdest Really Bad Movie, and I'm still hiding under my bed until these monsters all go away.
Not me. I want to see them up close, man. If you want monsters, we got them for you today. We're continuing. Yesterday, of course, we did good radio. The Witch's Tales, The Hairy Monster, and Mysterious Traveler, if you believe.
Yep, and we have another fan favorite tonight. Okay, so it's my favorite, one of my favorites. The Shadow returns once again with the gibbering things. And actually, maybe in a sense, you could kind of say a distant cousin to what happened with the Witch's Tale, because same guy who wrote all the episodes of The Witch's Tales and all the episodes of Casey Cram Photographer wrote this particular episode of The Shadow. He did about five of them. I think there's only about two of them. The Gar went nuts for about a week trying to find all the Alonzo Dean Cole episodes of The Shadow. I don't think he found any more than two or three that are out there. There are a lot of Shadows that are missing, especially when he got into the 50s and started playing with the audio tape, recording them onto there. They didn't always save the tape or sometimes record it over it afterwards. So, although
Ouch.
Brett Morrison, even though Brett Morrison did Shadow longer than anyone else, there are not that many more of his episodes than anyone else was out there. I think almost all of Orson Welles are there, almost all of them. A good deal of the next guy. But as far as this one here, who was longer than anyone else, he doesn't have that many more available. That's odd.
Hmm. So the gibbering things. So how did they get an old-time radio show about my in-laws? I don't know.
A coincidence? I think not.
And is the Shadow man enough to stand up to them? We'll find out shortly.
How well did you do standing up to them?
There's a reason I live in my own basement. At least it's my own basement. You know, it's not with my parents and my sisters. At least I hide in. I have the decency to hide in my own basement. This is where all the cool stuff happens anyway. Eerie House Radio and every now and again an episode of Spook Show.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah.
You never know.
So, and we got some other fun surprises tonight to go along with it.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've only had a one-half-hour show to share on our 90-minute program. So we've got a couple of other fun surprises as well.
Some audio treats you will not believe, and it's all about the monsters.
The sound you hear is dripping blood. This is the start of Black Sunday.
Well, not yet. It's Gray Saturday still, but...
Yes, Black Sunday. Well, that's tomorrow where we don't have a Browns game, right? Isn't that a Black Sunday?
Pretty much. Football's over as we know it. Maybe a couple second stringers in the Pro Bowl, who knows? But it's all about the monsters. We all have our favorites, whether it's the Universal Classics, Godzilla, or any of the other kaiju. The Hammer Monsters, there's just so many to choose from.
There are. I know that we've talked about some of our favorite movies, and I still think of all the monster, the classic monsters. I do enjoy the Wolfman. That would probably be a second for me, but I think Son of Frankenstein is my favorite. I don't know why, but that one just really, I really like that one.
Well, Dave, I like Bride a little bit better, but in the Frankenstein series, that's my second favorite too. There's so much that film has to offer. You've got a classic portrayal of Igor by Bela Lugosi. Say it surpasses his performance as the famous Count Dracula. You've got Basil, Rathbone. Basil Rathbone as the son of Frankenstein. And, of course, it's the last time Boris Karloff donned the Frankenstein makeup.
Yes, and he went directly to the hospital after this movie. So,
yeah.
That fire did not help him.
Little Donnie Donegan, the little boy. Who later went on to voice Bambi.
Oh, I didn't realize that. How cool. Very good.
Well, wait. After that, as an adult, he became a Marine.
Wow, Bambi, it's dangerous when Bambi becomes a Marine, man. They fight back.
Yeah. I think it's dangerous for the guy who used to play Bambi when you're going through basic training, but I digress. Oh, Bambi, were you? Oh, they're not going to tease that guy in the Marines? Nah.
Yeah, not
oh,
me.
My.
Not
oh,
me.
My. But no, Dave, that's a pick I would agree with. Son is an all-time great Universal monster movie. A lot to like about that one. And there's a lot to like about our radio show tonight.
Oh, what's not to love about The Shadow? You know what? I listened to The Shadow when I was younger. When I really started getting these two when I was in junior high school and such. Of course, there weren't as many of them available. And then I kind of got away. So, The Shadow, kind of a kid thing, but it isn't. The older I get, I think the more I appreciate The Shadow and the story building that a lot of time goes on around this. How either the story hasn't happened as they're coming on to it, or the fact that the story builds before they ever show up into it. So it's never exactly the same formula, shadow to shadow. And although Brett Morrison was shadow longer than any other actor, this actually was the very first time. This is his debut as the Shadow, this particular episode right here tonight.
So this is the first Brett Morrison. Now, the Shadow's a mystery, an adventure type story, but it's always dark with elements of horror. And tonight's story, you'll find exactly that in the gibbering things. Do we have an original broadcast date on Brett Morrison's first portrayal?
We do. September 26th, 1943.
We'll be back.
Evil lurks in the hearts of men. The Shadow knows.
Once again, your neighborhood blue coal dealer brings you the thrilling adventures of The Shadow, the hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. Friends, here's a very important way that you can help the war effort. You know, it's coal that keeps our war plants humming. Coal that keeps our trains moving. Coal that heats our soldiers and army camps. Yes, coal that supplies vital power and heat to countless wartime activities. So you can make an invaluable contribution to the war effort this winter by cutting your coal consumption to the absolute minimum. Start your personal coal conservation program this simple way. Hold your fire. Don't let the first chilly snap send you down to the furnace. Use the fireplace. Wear warmer clothing. Wait 2 or 3 weeks later than usual before starting your furnace. The coal you save now will help the home front and the war front, and it will help you keep warmer in the really bitter months to come. The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Several years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret: the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Gibbering Thing.
Well, nature puts on quite an autumn show up here, Margot.
Yes, doesn't it, Lamont?
Yeah. All New Hampshire's pretty country at any season, folks.
Are we nearly at our destination, driver?
Almost. About a mile and a half more, we'll be at the Haunted Woods.
Huh?
Haunted Woods?
Yes, sir. The place you've hired me to drive you to is just this side of them.
Oh, Aunt Susan never told me that she lived near any haunted woods, Lamont.
Miss Susan Prentice, your aunt, ma'am?
Yes, Mr. Cranston and I are going to spend the weekend with her.
Oh, that'll be a fine rest for you.
Well, those haunted woods don't sound quiet or restful.
Well, they won't bother you none. Leastwise, I've never been bothered in them. Neither was your aunt or Professor Surgoff, who lived smack in the center of them.
Why are they called the Haunted Woods?
Well, it's said that quite a few fellas have gone into them woods and completely disappeared. There was 2 lumberjacks and 4 or 5 harvest hands. Shucks, I figure they simply walked into the woods on one side and out the other.
Your logic is spoiling a nice mystery, driver.
Oh, I figured a natural explanation for the gibbering things, too.
Gibbering?
The gibbering things?
Ever so often, the doggondest noise is heard in them woods. A funny, squeaking, chattering kind of noise. Don't sound like it was made by either man or beast. The folks say it's made by things.
You figure that it's not made by things?
Mister, that gibbering noise is made by monkeys.
Monkeys?
In New Hampshire.
Yeah, Professor Surgoff's got a couple at his place that he's brought up in South America. I admit I don't know how their squeaky little voices can be heard so far away from the professor's house, but them monkeys is the only natural explanation.
Are those the haunted woods ahead of us now?
Yes, ma'am. That's them.
Heavens.
What's that?
Something screamed in those woods.
Yes, that was just an old screech owl. Yeah, there it is again.
Well, screech owls don't make their home this far north. They must have been brought up here like the monkeys you mentioned.
That's right. It's another pet of Professor Surgoff. Here's Miss Prentice's place.
Oh, Lamont, what a lovely little house.
I'll get your luggage out the back.
Here, let me help you, Margot.
Thank you.
Step directly on these flagstones. Ground's pretty wet.
Well, we had some thunderstorm today. Started early this morning and pulled down telephone wires and raised all kinds of nails.
That's so?
Really?
Yeah, why, I'd like to wait and say howdy to Miss Prentice, but as long as I'm out this way, I want to drop off a package at Professor Surgoff. Getting late, and I'd like to be in and out of them woods before dark.
Not because of the gibbering things?
Well, shucks, no. Just that the road through there is pretty terrible. A fellow wants daylight to get over it. I'll stop off on my way back from the professor's, see if your aunt wants anything fetched from the village for my next trip. So long.
So long.
So long. You never told me your aunt was deaf, Margot.
Deaf? Well, she isn't.
Well, she can't be at home then after this noisy arrival in front of the door.
But it is funny that she hasn't... Aunt Susan! Aunt Sue!
Are you sure she expected us today?
Oh, of course. Well, the door's unlocked. Let's go in, Lamont. She must have stepped out for a moment.
For a long moment. Let's have a look around. You take a peek at the kitchen.
All right.
Everything here's tidy, ship-shaped, and deserted.
Well, the kitchen door's been left unlocked.
Well, evidently your aunt didn't intend to be gone very long.
Well, what do you suppose has happened to her?
Well, chances are your aunt left here this morning to pay a brief call to some neighbors, and she was forced to stay there by the storm.
I was beginning to think Aunt Sue had been swallowed by those gibbering things in the haunted wood.
We have Mr. Dorema's assurance those gibbering things are vastly overrated.
What's that?
Well, listen.
It's the gibbering from those woods.
It's from deep in the woods. Doesn't sound like the chattering of any monkey that I've ever heard.
Lamont! Could that be the screech owl again?
That cry sounded human.
It's like a scream of mortal terror. Lamont, we've been waiting almost half an hour now for Aunt Sue. She'd be here by this time if she were all right.
Phone's still dead. The cab driver hasn't come back yet, and it's nearly dark. Let's go outside again and watch for him.
All right. He said he wanted to be out of those woods before dark. Come on, that's your way again.
It's much closer than before.
Seems to come from just the edge of those woods.
And the professor who keeps monkeys lives nearly a mile from here.
He's growing fainter now. Traveling away.
Margo, look here.
What?
In the earth of this flower bed.
Tiny footprints. But they've been made by a barefoot child, a baby. Since the rain. How did the baby get out here?
These prints were made since I was looking around this garden only a few minutes ago. And their sole resemblance to a baby's is their size. Look closer. No child could walk upright on feet that left these impressions. They're deformed.
Yes, I see now.
So whatever made the footprints didn't walk upright very far. Here it dropped on all fours.
Those are prints of little hands. But only two fingers are outlined. And what horrible thumbs. These tracks were left by some animal.
But what kind of an animal? I never saw a spoor like this before.
No, neither have I. Look, they disappear here in the grass.
Margo, someone's coming out of the woods.
A man? What's he got on his head? It's getting so dark I can hardly see.
I think it's a helmet of some sort. He's carrying a net.
A net?
It looks like it. Seems to be hunting for something.
Hello there. Hello. Who are you?
We're about to ask the same question.
My name is Sergov. Alexander Sergov.
Well, now, he may know. I'm Margot Lane, Miss Prentice's niece, Professor.
Miss Prentice's niece?
Yes, and this is Mr. Cranston. We just arrived to spend a few days with Aunt Susan, and she's not here.
I have not seen Miss Prentice for several days. Was she expecting you and Mr. Cranston?
Yes, she was.
Professor, if I'm not too inquisitive, what do you hunt with a net at this time of night?
I keep a small zoological collection, Mr. Cranston, and one of my little animals escaped this afternoon, and I was searching for it with my net.
Dangerous animal? I see you're wearing heavy gloves.
It was a small ape with sharp little teeth that can, what you call, nip very painfully. Perhaps you heard it chattering in the woods a while ago.
We heard something gibbering in there.
That was my little pet.
Does it malformed hands and feet, Professor? Does it leave tracks like this?
You did not see it leave those tracks?
No, we found them by accident a few minutes ago.
The creature I'm searching for is not a perfect specimen. These tracks are fresh, which means that it is close by, and I'm most anxious to recapture it. So, if you will please excuse me. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, at least we've learned what's behind those footprints and that gibbering.
I'm still wondering if that was a screech owl we heard soon after Doremus left us.
What for, Lamont?
I'm going to get a gun and flashlight out of my bag and do a little hunting of my own in these woods.
But...
Where's the light switch?
Yes.
Oh, thanks.
Lamont, a gibbering can.
It's just outside the house.
Do you know it's only a crippled ape that...
Margot, what...
It's face! Face at the window!
Where?
It's gone now. But it was pressed close against the glass. It had no features, Lamont, except eyes. And a toothless mouth. It was the face of the gibbering thing! Lamont, turn your flashlight on those trees as well as on the road. That gibbering thing may be in these woods.
Yes, I'm watching, Margot. There's only one set of tire tracks in this road, so Doremus traveled it only one way. You sure, Margot, that the face of the window had no features?
It was just pink, bald flesh. With tiny pig-like eyes and grinning toothless gums. What could it have been?
If you weren't having a nightmare, I don't know. Good Lord, look there.
Doremus's cab turned on its side.
Come on.
There's Doremus. Oh!
He's been thrown from his cab against that rock.
His head's all crushed. Oh, Lamont.
Strange. There's no blood around the wound.
No blood?
Someone or something has washed it absolutely clean. Look at his throat. Big bruise mark.
His fall from his head didn't do that.
No. Looks as though some terrific suction had been applied by something like a giant leech.
That thing with the toothless mouth. Lamont, you've got to find out what that gibbering monster is. It may have killed Aunt Sue as well as Doreen.
Come on back to your aunt's house. After I see you locked safely inside, Professor Seergoff is going to receive a visit from the Shadow.
Why are you so worried, Professor?
What? Who is speaking to me? I cannot see anyone.
I'm the Shadow.
The Shadow? An invisible man?
A little secret I learned in the Orient.
What do you want here?
I shall ask the questions. First, did you find the small ape you were hunting for?
You know that I was hunting...
The Shadow overheard your conversation with a Miss Lane and a Mr. Cranston a while ago. Did you find the ape?
Yes.
What did you do with it? I visited the cages where you keep your pets and found no crippled monkey there.
I was forced to shoot the animal. I buried it in the woods.
After it had gorged itself on the blood of Doremus?
Doremus?
Didn't know he was lying dead in the woods?
No, I swear I did not, Shadow. I had nothing to do with it.
But you know what killed him?
No.
Don't lie. You also know the reason for Susan Prentice's disappearance.
I do not.
Her absence will cause an intensive search.
She will not be found here. This is a small house. Nothing could be concealed in it. Search it yourself.
Luck has been with you so far, Professor. If telephone service hadn't been disrupted by the storm, the authorities would already have been notified and the search begun. The luck of criminals is never good for long. Your time is running out. The police will find the body of Doremus, and they'll be told about a squealing monster with a horrible toothless mouth.
What?
The gibbering thing has been seen tonight. Now you must think and act fast, Professor. You must think and act faster than the Shadow.
Friends, if you heat your home with coal, listen. Here's some important good news. Your friendly neighborhood Blue Coal dealer is happy to announce that he already has available, on a first-come, first-served basis, a small supply of automatic heat regulators to aid in the urgent coal conservation program. Now listen to what an automatic heat regulator does. It takes full charge of your furnace operation, giving you a constant, even temperature day and night. It eliminates those wide swings in temperature when it's always too hot or too cold. It saves you those incessant trips to the basement when you try to control the temperature yourself. It helps protect your family against winter colds, which many doctors agree result from overheating or unstable temperature. And most important, it saves coal vital to the war effort and money for you. An automatic heat regulator costs little to begin with and soon pays for itself in fuel savings. Don't wait for the first freeze. There are just a few automatic heat regulators available, so act now. Call your friendly Blue Coal dealer and place your order tomorrow. And now, back to the Shadow.
But before we get to the Shadow, I'm going to order up me some Blue Coal.
Yeah, I just called them. They said that number is out of service. That's no fair.
That doesn't seem right.
No.
Something is amiss here. We just heard it on radio.
I know. False advertising. Fake news. We have Brett Morrison as the Shadow. He was, although he was a longer Shadow for about almost a total of 10 years, he was the third and the sixth Shadow, born in Chicago. And in Chicago, at the time, may have been the second largest city. A lot of our radio came out of Chicago. They had their own programs, but they had programs that went nationwide as well. But when he was in the 1930s, when he was still in high school, Chicago High School, he began the First Nighter program in 1937. He was also in the cast of Lucky Girl, a Monday through Friday drama broadcast on WGN in Chicago, which means it was probably a soap opera. He did play the Shadow longer than any other actor. First, of course, it was Orson Welles, followed by Bill Johnstone, in early 1943, and until 1943, and Morrison took over in April 43 and went on until 1944. John Archer came on 1944-45, followed by Steve Kerlig for 1945. Morrison came back in 45 and stayed until the rest of the run in 1954. Not as sinister as the other Shadows, but probably the best known because of that, the fact that he, but you know, we've listened to so many of his great tales here, the Werewolf of Hamilton Mansion and Isle of the Living Dead, and so many of these wonderful episodes. There are other programs he was on while in Chicago. He was a host narrator, a bestseller. He was a cast member of Chicago Theater of the Air. He was Chris Gunn on the program Great Guns. He was Clifford Foster on The Guiding Light, the soap opera. He also was host narrator and on Listening Post, Master Ceremonies of Melody Theater. He was the host of Musical Bouquet. By the way, he was also a popular cabaret singer. He was Jonathan Howard on another radio soap opera, The Romance of Helen Trent.
Aha. So a busy bee was he.
He was. And actually, when The Shadow was going, when The Shadow was ending or had ended, he ended up going doing a lot of other programs, including several X minus ones. And he had, and exploring. Not Exploring Tomorrow, I'm thinking the Beyond Tomorrow. He did a wonderful thing. And he had this thing that he could either play this really old-sounding professor kind of guy or as a young guy. Even to his later years when he was doing, he did three mystery CBS Radio Mystery Theaters in 74 and three in 75. And that must have been difficult for him because he was living in California at the time, I believe. And actually, that's where he died at the age of 66 is all in Palm Springs, California. He died of a heart attack. He was found slumped over a steering wheel of his parked car on Hollywood Street where he had stopped for shopping after taping an episode of Heartbeat Theater. It was believed that the 107-degree temperatures in Southern California heat wave may have prompted Morrison's heart attack.
Well, that's a heck of a way for The Shadow to go out, but
it was.
But he's alive and well with us today, thanks to these old time recordings that we love sharing with you. Dave, they describe the gibbering things as grinning and toothless. I told you this was about my in-laws. that's two things.
Well, it's either that or. That's either that or the front row of a Willie Nelson concert, you know?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Gibbering and toothless. Yeehaw. Poor Willie.
My favorite story.
You want to hear the exciting conclusion of our first feature-length soundbite stuff. This is part two of The Gibbering Things with The Shadow.
Lamont, did Professor Seagull tell you anything when you visited him as a shadow?
I didn't expect him to, Margot. The shadow's purpose was to force Seagull into some revealing action. I'm confident that he'll make that action before morning, but I'm taking no chances. I'm going to leave you again now and go back into those woods.
Why?
Professor Seagoff doesn't confine his activities within the limits of his small home. I'm going to discover, if I can, where he carries on his major studies.
Let me go with you, Lamont.
No, I want you to stay here. Lock yourself in the house and don't leave it. I expect to be gone for some time.
Fine. Screech owl. Back door. Who's there? What do you...
Good evening, Miss Lane.
Professor Seagull.
When one locks a glass panel door, the key should never be left in the lock. It is so easy to break the glass, reach inside, and turn the key.
Why have you broken in here?
I just saw Mr. Cranston go into the woods, and I considered this an excellent opportunity to talk with you alone.
That gun.
This gun will do you no harm if you're obedient. You and I are going for a little walk, Miss Lane, and you are going quietly.
Where are you taking me through these woods?
You'll soon learn. Here's our stopping place.
There's nothing here but trees and that big rock.
Yes, watch that rock.
It's swinging out like a door.
It is a door to a very secret natural cave below. Ladies first, Miss Lane.
I won't go down to that darkness.
You need not go in darkness. We have electric light here. Step in, Miss Lane. I wish to close my bulky door.
No, I...
Do not try my patience. Go. Now, down these stairs. And you can see my little refuge.
Shivering cries.
A little welcome for you.
These hideous things that make them are behind that door.
Hideous things? So you saw the little creature that escaped tonight?
It pressed its awful face against the window. Don't make me look at it again.
You won't see anything to frighten you when I open the door. There's nothing in this chamber except those steel cabinets around the walls, that iron water pipe above, and this heavy rope that dangles from the pipe. You will find the rope of special interest. I call your attention to the snap hook on its loose end.
No, let me go.
As soon as I lock these handcuffs on your wrists behind your back like this, hook the rope to your cuffs like this. Now, I let you go. Nicely tethered.
What are you going to do to me here?
I shall satisfy your curiosity about the gibbering things. You have seen but one. I have many such children.
Children?
Yes. I am their father, their creator. I am their god. I have discovered the secret of life.
Of life?
I have evolved a complex life form from the single cell. Nature required a billion years to do what I have done in 10. I am greater than nature.
You're a madman.
Am I? You shall see. The steel cabinets you see around these walls are really insulated soundproof covers for my children's cages. This lever opens the apparent cabinets. Watch. Before, you saw the handsomest of my little beauties. Now you can look at him again and 30 of his brothers. Hear them squeal their greetings to you.
No, let me out of here.
Don't be afraid. Their cages are strong. They cannot get at you now.
please. They're so horrible.
Well, I admit that I have not as yet achieved perfection in their appearance, but I progress. Now, here is my first experiment. It resembles a shapeless sponge, but it's alive. It moves and breathes.
Oh, please.
And here is a little creature that lacks arms and legs. See it bounce its way about? Its brother in the next cage has twice the usual number of limbs. This one has 8 hands. That one has no eyes or ears. And there's one with no head. And here's one without a body.
Stop it!
But they're all alive, Miss Lane. All can move and fast. All have mouths and appetites, Miss Lane. For human blood. Their only diet.
Human blood?
Yes, I keep human cows, Miss Lane, and you are to become a human cow and feed my children.
Oh, no!
That is why you are tethered here. This chamber is their dining room.
No.
I shall pull a lever that opens their cages as I go out this door to safety. They are very greedy, but I will not let them drink too much of your blood, Miss Lane, for now you are a cow and valuable to me. I leave you now to pull the lever. Ah! My throat!
You feel the shadow's hands upon you, Sagoff.
The shadow.
Oh.
The shadow is a man would like to close his fingers tight about your neck. As a respecter of the law, he lets you live.
Oh, Shadow.
Unlock your handcuffs, Hugo.
Don't touch me again. I will.
Be quick.
There.
Oh, I'm free and I can leave this room. Go where I won't see and hear those awful things.
Yes, go.
And I'll go with you out that door.
Hugo!
The door is locked and closed upon you, Shadow. The lever that opens my children's cages is on this side of the door, and I release them now.
No!
My children do not have to see a man to find him, Shadow. Their greed for blood would lead them to you, and they are to have all your blood, Shadow. You will be dead before this door is opened. Dead! It is now 30 minutes since that door was closed upon our former friend, the Shadow. My children have killed strong men within 5 minutes, so I think it is time, Miss Lane, for us to view the remains, which will be visible, I imagine. But first, I shall reunite you with your aunt.
You have my aunt here?
Yes, unfortunately escaped and told me of her intention to notify the authorities. I was forced to add her to my herd of cows. That herd includes the itinerant lumberjacks and harvest hands who have disappeared in the haunted woods. When fools hear their screams of pain, they think they hear my little screech owl.
Oh, you... There's no word that fits you.
Before I can safely view the dead body of the shadow, my children must be returned to their cages. And my cows take care of that. Your aunt's stall is behind this door.
Aunt Sue! Aunt Sue!
We'll let her out.
Margot! Oh, Margot.
What a touching reunion. You shall see a great deal of each other from now on, for you will be stable together. My male cattle are in here. Come out, beasts. And don't forget that I hold the usual loaded revolver.
Oh, poor men.
Yes, my male cattle aren't as healthy looking as you and your aunt, Miss Lane, but they have been here a long time.
They're walking skeletons.
They still manufacture blood. That's all that matters. Fall in line, beasts. You with them, female cattle.
No!
Fall in line.
Oh, come, Margot, come. There's nothing... Nothing we can do.
You're learning fast, Miss Prentice. Now march, all of you, to the feeding room. You ought to have an easy time tonight. My children have been fed and well. You need only pick them up and return them to their cages.
Pick up those things?
Yes, Miss Lane, and tenderly.
Oh.
Unlock the door. Go in and do as I've told you. Now you see how tame my cattle are, Miss Lane? You will soon be like them. Hurry in there. Get my pets behind their bars. I'm anxious to come in and pay my last respects.
Your children are in their cages, Master.
Ah, now we shall see. I thought the shadow would be visible in death. His mental power is gone, but I do not see him.
Can you feel him, Sirgoff?
Ah!
Shadow!
Yes, I'm not an easy victim, Sirgoff. Pick up that gun he dropped, Miss Lane.
Something we cannot see has got him.
Give Sirgoff to us.
Keep back, you men. I know how you must hate this devil, but I promise you he'll get justice. Now everyone leave this room. Everyone but Sirgoff.
Everyone but me.
You're going to be left alone here. Alone as you've left the others.
No, no. Do not put those handcuffs on me.
Yes. Lock behind your back. Now.
No, not that tether rope. Do not hook me to that.
The way you fastened others.
Yes, we can do to him when he's done.
Get out of this room, you men. We're leaving Professor Sirgoff with his children.
We'll turn the vampires loose on him.
No, do not open those cages. Do not turn them loose on me. Please, Shadow, please.
You're safe, Sirgoff. The cages won't be opened.
Did you say, Shadow, that those cages won't be opened? That Sirgoff is safe?
He's safe from those things he created. That room will be Sirgoff's prison until the police arrive to take him to another.
Police?
Prison?
Shadow, you promised us that devil would get justice.
He will. But the law must fix his punishment.
We've been Sirgoff's slaves. His cattle. Those things he made have fastened on our flesh. They drank our blood.
We want no police. We want no law. We want no law. They have no punishment to fit that devil's crime.
We'll attend to Sirgoff.
And we are. You men have suffered here, but you're civilized men. You must abide by rules of order, not by instincts of revenge.
We're no longer men. We're cattle.
Sirgoff has made us beasts.
And there are many of us, Shadow. You are only one.
Keep away from that door.
We didn't want to open the door, Shadow. We only wanted to lock it.
And we have locked it. We have the key.
Pull the lever that opens those cages.
No!
You're too late, Shadow. Listen! Sirgoff's children move fast. They've already reached their father. We've given Sirgoff the justice he deserves.
Well, Margot, Sirgoff's cattle were too many and too quick. But Sirgoff won't put the state to any expense. Your aunt's safe in her home again. And his children...
Those men just trampled him after you finally forced that door. And I'm not sorry things happened as they did. Sirgoff was going to turn those gibbering things loose on me.
Well, he did turn them loose on the shadow.
Lamont, you haven't told me why the shadow wasn't killed by those monsters.
Well, Sirgoff made a serious mistake. When he left other victims in that room, their hands had been secured behind their backs and fastened to the tether rope. The shadow was free. One end of the tether rope was attached to an iron pipe near the ceiling. Well, he took a moment to loop the other end with its heavy hook over the pipe and fasten it. And seated in that swing, the shadow was well above the reach of the little vampires.
Oh, when you were locked in that room, I was sure it meant your death.
One can never be sure of anything, Margot. You know, when I was invited to your Aunt Susan's, as I recall, I had promised myself a quiet, restful weekend.
Yes, I remember.
You
Now let me introduce Blue Coal's distinguished heating expert, John Barclay.
Thank you, Ken Roberts, and good evening, friends. I'm glad to be back with you again. And this year, with fuel so vitally needed for the war effort, I hope to bring you special information that will help you to heat your home more efficiently and economically. Thousands of tons of coal can be conserved if everyone will give special thought to the efficient operation of their furnace. Operating a heating plant efficiently is easy. And if you will follow a few simple suggestions, you can not only save considerable fuel, but your home will be healthfully heated as well. A clean furnace is number one on the list of important things that will result in conserving fuel. So put your heating plant in good working order. It's easy to clean a furnace. For tools, all you need to do a good job is an inexpensive wire brush and a scraper. You can get these at any hardware store. Why a small can of asbestos furnace cement? Add all soot and fly ash. Use the asbestos cement to seal up leaks around the smoke pipe where it enters into the chimney. Make sure that the dampers are in good working order and that all furnace doors fit tightly. Remember, a clean furnace conserves coal, gives you more heat for the fuel you burn, and will keep your family warm and healthful all winter long. I thank you.
The Shadow program is based on a story copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications. The characters, names, places, and plots are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Again next week, the Shadow will demonstrate that
the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, your friendly Blue Coal dealer brings you another strange and thrilling adventure in the Shadow's daring battle against the forces of evil. Be sure to listen. This is Ken Roberts saying, keep the home fires burning with Blue Coal.
And I think the Shadow kind of let that happen at the end. Let that doctor get it.
Well, you know what? He did that on the Isle of the Living Dead when the zombies got the lady that was keeping them in the basement, in the cellar. Yeah. So
yeah.
He's got a bit of a cruel
kind
he's
of a
got
cruel,
a bit of a cruel
dark ending.
The only problem I don't understand why he thinks a crime does not pay is so funny. Unless, of course, he thinks that he knows it does pay or something. You know, he just, I don't know. But he always laughs at
that's just part of his sinister side that wants to evoke fear in the hearts of men.
Could be.
Yeah.
I'll buy that if that's what you're selling.
I think that's why he laughs when he addresses his foes, to set him off ease and show him that he's in control.
Yes. No, and very much so. Very much so. Far contrast when you read the earliest of the Shadow novels or the pulp fiction novels. He's not invisible at all. He has a network of operatives, but he's always lingering in the shadows or in the dark corner or hiding in the closet, peering out, things like that. Today, he could get arrested for that, but of course,
yeah.
If he became... Of course, if he's becoming visible, then just try and arrest him if he's invisible, though.
Yeah. And now he'd get arrested for peeping or something like that. I learned all that in the Orient.
Ah.
Also learned something else today. About to, because Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. If you're lost while driving through the woods and you hear something gibbering, and it's not your in-laws, just keep driving. Maybe if it's your in-laws, you should keep driving anyway. There you go.
Then make a sharp left, knowing that your right passenger side door is a little loose, and as you round the corner, you hear. That's the end of her.
Yep. Okay. Then you got the insurance money to collect, and we got it all plotted out now.
Yes, I do. I have everything plotted out.
Oh,
but you
my.
Sir, have plotted out some nice little bonus material for our show tonight.
I would think we'd be done in 15 minutes
from now. But we're not. We're not done in 15 minutes.
Yeah, you plotted out a couple, and I plotted out one. But it's a little bit of fun with the one I bring along with us, with the Fred Allen Show. And a special appearance. Of course, he did so many appearances, whether drama or even comedy. Boris Karloff. And he was adept at hanging in with either one, mostly because he played the comedy stuff straight, even though doing, in a sense, a tongue-in-cheek version of his movie persona on programs.
And he was great at it. One of the most beloved horror actors, not just on the screen, but off the screen as well. Ever the gentleman, Boris Karloff. And you've got him on Fred Allen.
Yeah, interesting thing about Fred Allen. He's someone I learned to appreciate, basically like the Great Gildersleeve. The older I got, the more I appreciated their programs. Fred Allen was more of a writer than a performer. He also had other writers with him, but he had a library of every radio script he ever wrote. And a big library that was, too, for being on the radio well over 20 years. And never really found his niche in television. He kind of was doing okay on a couple of game shows, but he never really found his proper niche on television, unfortunately. But man, did he hit it on radio. And when what's funny is, you know, you think of Red Skelton ad-libbing, you think of Bob Hope ad-libbing. You don't really think of Fred Allen's ad-libber, but when something didn't go right, he always had some kind of comment to try and get a snicker out of it when it just went over like a lead balloon. And that was Fred Allen. He was great at assembling talent and putting together a show, as well as the writing, and he only did a couple of movies. If you ever get a chance to catch, I saw it once in a throwaway bin on Walmart. I didn't pick it up, and I haven't seen it again since. O. Henry's, I think it was called House of Cards, and he and Oscar Levant, who was a band director for the Kraft Music Hall. They did a segment one of O. Henry's stories. It was like a three or four O. Henry stories wrapped into one movie. So I have great admiration for Fred Allen, for his writing and for his ability to pick things up when they're just laying there.
Well, you're making me like Fred Allen, but I still love Karloff more. Let's treat our audience to this little bit. Can you tell us a little bit more about the clip?
Well, of course, this is I think 45. There's a great housing shortage because so many resources and a lot of the men that we're building are off at war. Fred Allen is looking for a new house in New York, and Boris Karloff is heading back to Hollywood to do some more movie work, and Boris was thinking about renting his house out and when they get the chance to meet.
And here we go. This is from the Fred Allen Show. We'll be back in about 10 minutes.
I'll take anything, a hook in someone's closet if I can.
Hey, wait, there's a guy came in a minute ago. He wants to rent his house. Hey, Buck, I got a prospect for you. Allen, meet Boris Karloff.
Boris Karloff.
Thank you. I beg your pardon. Have we met before?
Mr. Karloff, don't you remember me? Take a good look at my face.
You look like something that fell out of a closet in my last picture.
Mr. Karloff, I'm Fred Allen. I met you in Hollywood.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You were out there making a horror picture.
Well, I didn't go out to Hollywood to make a horror picture. My picture just happened to turn out that way. And I may... I may say in rebuttal, Mr. Karloff, seeing you in person is sort of a letdown.
How do you mean, Fred?
Well, you look human. Now, I expected to see a man who was part monster with a long, ratty tail.
Suits to cover it nicely, doesn't it?
Yes, I noticed your tailor left enough room in back there in case you get happy and start wagging. But tell me, Boris, what brings you to New York? Are you going into that show, Follow the Ghouls? or I Remember Mummy?
Fred, I'm just here sightseeing.
Oh, sightseeing, huh? Mm-hmm. Sightseeing to you, I guess mornings you just lift up a manhole cover and take a long stroll through a sewer, meeting old acquaintances. Afternoons you browse around the morgue. And nights, I imagine, you whoop it up around some cemetery.
Why, Fred, how you do go on.
Well, how do you spend your day?
Mornings, I scamper through Central Park, uphill and down Dale with my butterfly net.
Oh, really?
Afternoons, I go to Macy's toy department and spend an hour or two perched on Santa Claus' knee.
You do?
At night, I run around Strath, blowing through straws that are left in soda glass.
And then?
Dog tired, lark happy, and smelling of phosphate. I'm home, safely tucked in bed by 8 o'clock.
Well, that makes a full day, smelling of phosphate, Boris. But let's get down to business. I have no place to sleep these nights. The rental agent says...
Yes, yes, yes. I'm going back to Hollywood, and I'd like to rent my house.
Rent your house. Good. When can I see it?
Why don't you drop in tonight?
What's the address?
237 92nd Street.
Yes. The house on 92nd Street. Well, Portland, that night I started for Boris Karloff's house. It was pitch dark. The wind was blowing. A storm was coming up. I finally found it, the house on 92nd Street. It was a creepy-looking joint. I walked up the rickety steps. I rang the doorbell. The door opened slowly. I heard an old woman say,
"Come in!"
Mr. Karloff is expecting me.
I'll tell him you're here.
She sounds like the wife of the smiling Irishman. Gosh, it's gloomy in here. What's this? Gad, a human head rolling down the hall.
What's up, chum?
Who's that? Who's talking?
It's me down here, the head.
Who are you, head?
I used to be Karloff's girlfriend.
What became of your body?
I had a corn on one foot. Yes. Karloff told me he was chiropodist.
Yes?
He started cutting off my corn. I fell asleep. I could feel Karloff cutting.
Yes?
When I woke up, my corn was gone, Karloff was gone, I was gone.
You were gone?
All but my head.
Gad, Karloff must be mad.
Karloff's mad? How do you think I feel?
I can imagine.
Well, I gotta go, chum. Stop me rolling, will you?
In what direction?
Which way is... Can you top this?
Oh, you're going to see the repeat show, are you? Well, I'll give you a head start. Here we go.
Thanks, Jack.
Okay, Head. Gad, this place is spooky. I'm getting out of here. Where does this door go? A closet. Wow, it's dark and musty.
Hello, Fred.
Yes! Oh, it's you, Boris Karloff. What are you doing in this closet?
I was just hanging up an old suit.
Boris, I think you left a man in the suit.
I never hang a suit up empty. Wrinkled.
Now, look, Boris.
Follow me, Fred. I'll show you the house.
No, never mind, never mind. I can get a room at the Z.
The Z?
The Z is a little place in back of the Y. Well, I'll be getting...
Here come, Fred. It's dark. Take my hand.
Gad, your hand is clammy, Boris. It feels like five eels with hangnails.
This way, Fred, and I'll show you the house. Now, this room here is the parlor.
Hello, Karloff.
Hello, Frankie. Fred, meet Frankenstein.
Frankenstein?
Go away. Leave me alone.
You must excuse Dr. Frankenstein, Fred. He's frustrated.
Frustrated?
He hasn't made any new monsters in 3 years.
Why?
The war, you know. He can't get parts.
Let's get along, Boris.
Now, down this hall.
Say, what's this door?
Don't go near that door.
But I...
It only leads to the basement.
Well, let's
now,
take
I
it.
Warn you, Alan, don't ever look in there. Pardon me. There's someone at the front door.
He's gone. Karloff must be hiding something in that basement. I'll open this door. Gad, the basement is filled with machinery. Two scientists working there. They're talking.
How can you keep a dead fish from smelling?
Cut off its nose.
What has four wheels and flies?
A garbage wagon.
10 men under an umbrella. Nobody got wet.
It wasn't raining.
That's enough, Professor. Start the dehydrator.
Jeepers, here comes Karloff.
Sorry I kept you waiting, Fred.
Oh, that's all right, Boris. Who was at the front door?
Man from the medical school.
Really?
Wants to know if I got the new bodies for him today.
Oh...
I told him to wait.
Well, Boris, I've got to be getting along, over.
Excuse me, that's the phone. I'll be right back.
He's gone again. I've got to see what's going on in that basement. I'll open the door.
Why do you always flirt with waitresses?
I'm playing for big stakes.
In 6 months, my wife made me a pauper.
Was it a boy or a girl?
Why does a fireman wear red suspenders?
To hold up his pants.
Okay, Professor, start the compressor.
Gosh, if I didn't know that Abbott and Costello were in Hollywood, I'd swear... Uh-uh, here comes Karloff.
Alan, did I see you near that basement door?
Basement? Why, no, Boris. Who was on the phone?
Dracula. He's been drinking.
Dracula's off on a bat again, hey?
Come, Fred, I'll show you the rumpus room. Darn it, the front door and the phone. Don't go away.
The basement. I've got to find out what those scientists are doing down there.
What kind of a hen lays the longest?
A dead hen.
Do you know Lincoln's Gettysburg address?
I didn't even know he moved.
Waiter, there's a fly in my soup.
How much can a little fly drink?
Professor, set the neutron gauge.
Neutron gauge. I think I understand.
Oh, you do you?
Karloff.
Alan, I saw you open the door to my basement.
But I only...
I warned you. I told you the man who looked in there would never live to tell what he saw.
Karloff, put down that knife.
Alan, your time has come.
You're insane, Karloff. I know your mad plan.
What plan?
Those two scientists in the basement with those jokes.
You know?
Yes. They're jamming millions of old radio jokes into that huge condenser. The uranium cyclotron will reduce those old jokes down to one concentrated gag. It will be the most powerful bad gag the world has ever known. That gag will be...
No!
The atomic joke! If that joke is ever spoken into a microphone, Karloff, it will blow up all of radio.
Yes, my atomic
joke will destroy radio and benefit humanity.
You are crazy, Karloff. Your atomic joke will never succeed.
The atom can destroy everything.
Everything but radio. If radio can survive 15 years of Jack Benny, nothing can ever hurt it.
And, of course, Fred Allen taking a comical poke at his pal, Jack Benny.
as they did, as Hope and Crosby did, as not so comedic, but a great radio feud of W.C. Fields and Charlie McCarthy. There is, as W.C. Fields, in between movies, sometimes would join Edgar Bergen's show and end up getting his own radio show for a short time. But he really preferred to spend his time in the movies. So, good old William Claude.
Too bad. He had a lot of good lines. He had a face for radio, too.
He did. And a nose for it. Ah, yes.
It's a great big dial.
It makes me think. I found it on YouTube. One of my favorite Christmas specials. Way back when my first son was young. The first time I had cable, we had HBO for a while. And that winter, they had a Freddy the Freeloader Christmas special, half an hour long, with Red Skelton. And they had Rich Little's Christmas Carol. And in this Rich Little's Christmas Carol, he was all the different characters that were famous people and were playing the people in there. And he was he had W.C. Fields as Ebenezer Scrooge. It was absolutely fabulous. It's on YouTube. I found it just recently again. It's just absolutely fabulous.
Fabu.
And I wanted to mention a few days ago passed. One of my writing and even performing heroes, Dave Osborne, he was a writer for the Smothers Brothers. He was Officer Bob. He was Super Dave Osborne. That's why I'm thinking Bob Einstein. He was Super Dave Osborne. And I guess more currently, he had been on HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. Just a hero of mine, just because of his writing and performing. And I grew up not only on the Smothers Brothers, but also on Super Dave Osborne. My oldest was old enough to appreciate his stuff as well. So it was just a bit of a shock and a sadness for me this week as we lost Bob Einstein.
We have a little more fun for him with Monster Weekend here today. A show called Incredible But True. It's short tales of monsters, scary footprints, voices from beyond the grave. Just all kinds of incredible stuff. But they are true, according to the radio show. It dramatized unexplainable mysteries from all over the world and all time periods. So sometimes it was current or sometimes historical. It was enhanced with dramatic organ music, and the show was narrated by Ken Nordine. Now, sometimes the stories tried to add a little bit too much to make it supernatural, but they're still a fun representation of old wise tales and superstitions and things like that. And I picked one out today to share. It happened to fit our theme today. This one's called Death of a Monster. It's only about 3.5 minutes long. We'll be back.
Out of the telltale traces embedded in the ancient rocks, science has constructed a picture of prehistoric life. It is a picture filled with grotesque and monstrous creatures who walked the earth at the dawn of the world. At least, so the textbooks tell us. But then, the textbooks carefully ignore the bewildering experience of a man named Amogino. Among zoologists and paleontologists throughout the world, the name of Professor Florentino Amogino was known and esteemed. Each year, in his opening lecture at the South American University where he taught, the professor would stress what an accurate and exact science paleontology has become.
During the coming year are not guesses. We know that there were such animals as the dinosaurs, The giant sloths. We know what they look like.
Yes, Professor Anagino was almost complacent in his faith in the science which he taught. But on a certain day in the late summer, the professor arrived at the university to find a small box lying on the desk in his office.
What's this box doing here, Ramon? Someone sent it all the way from Patagonia. Oh, here's a note on top. Dear Professor, I know you will be interested in this. It was found hanging on a bush near Ultima Esperanza. The natives claim to have killed the animal it belonged to, but they do not know what kind of animal it was. Perhaps you can figure it out. That is a piece of hide. What sort of creature?
Wait a minute. No, it could not possibly be.
A few days later, when Professor Anagino arose to deliver his opening lecture to his new class, the air of assurance, of authority, was gone.
What I teach you is not to be taken as gospel truth. Perhaps our whole science is a structure of self-delusion. I do not know.
Word of this strange, disturbing lecture spread through the university. When it reached the ears of the professor's colleagues, one of them sought him out in his office and reproached him. The professor's only answer was to take the piece of hide from the box on his desk and hand it quietly to his colleague.
How old would you say this skin is, Doctor? When did the animal die?
Well, not more than a year ago, obviously. The skin is still quite fresh.
And what sort of animal was it?
What animal do you think it was?
I know what animal it was. That is the skin of a giant sloth.
A giant? Are you out of your mind, man? The giant sloth died out at least 25 million years ago. This cannot be the skin of a giant sloth.
No, it cannot be, can it? And yet, that's precisely what it is.
Until the day he died, Professor Florentino Ameghino maintained that he had correctly identified the piece of skin. And since his death, evidence has accumulated to justify his opinion. But how a prehistoric monster, a member of a species condemned to death eons ago by the laws of evolution, could have been wandering across the plains of Patagonia in the 20th century, this science has never explained. It remains a mystery. Incredible, but true.
Or it could have been frozen high up in the mountains of Patagonia and was thawed out just like mammoths and other creatures that we found.
Absolutely.
Hate to blow the mystery, but that's what I was thinking during that program.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a, this was kind of a Ripley's Believe It or Not type show. Not necessarily this version. There was a version from 1950-51 was 15 minutes long, where they strung together several of these. They also later on, that was also hosted by Ken Nordine. He also did the 3-minute shows. He hosted those as well later on that were then sent out for syndication to stations. That's the kind of thing that really went well in the 60s. That's where you have your 3 to 5 minute things, like your Ellery Queen Minute Mystery, your Chicken Man, your Tooth Fairy, your Story Lady, all these things that were big in the 60s because of that. Ken Nordine, an icon in radio announcing in Chicago. I got a chance to see him live. I don't remember the year exactly we did it. We got to do this. My brother called me up. He was going to school in Chicago at the time, up at the seminary. And the Museum of Broadcast of Radio and Television in Chicago was doing a fundraiser. And for that fundraiser, they flew in Hyman Brown from the East Coast, from New York, and to star in it, they brought in I don't know, I can't think of his name, it'll come to me, but he brought him in from Hollywood, and they recreated the CBS Radio Mystery Theater from the original script of it, the Suicide Club, written by Robert Louis Stevenson, and updated. They did that live on stage. You got to see them rehearse, and then they took a lunch break, came back, and then they did it live in front of the audience. They had a guy from that was a sound effects man there originally for McGee and Molly, because they started there in 1935 in Chicago before they moved to the West Coast. So for McGee and Molly's original sound effects man was there, as well as they had carts there for the music bits and some of the other sound effects and things. And their host, instead of E.G. Marshall, they had Ken Nordine step in to that role, being iconic, iconic voice in Chicago. But if you listen to NPR, he also did a couple of series of programs called Voice Jazz. So very, very, very talented guy. And I got to see them do that. And I got to see Hyman Brown and Les Tremaine. That's who they brought in from the West Coast. I'm sorry. It was just an awesome experience. And watching how they did that is when I did the half-hour radio dramas that we did. That's how I did kind of a sit-down around the table, reading through, getting timing and stuff, then stand up around the mics, we recorded, not for use, but just, you know, in case we needed to go back, which I did one time, go back and use a line that we did because he said the wrong line and I didn't catch it when we did it. Then once around the microphone to record it. And that's how Hyman Brown set his up for that particular fundraiser. But all the rest of the actors outside of Les Tremaine, they were all local Chicago actors and radio actors, because they that Heartbeat Theater, and that's one, and there was one by a Christian service that was also going on, Redemption or something like that was the name of the show. So some people that were acting that came over to participate in this fundraiser. I just can't tell you what a really cool event that was in my life, Dale.
That had to be an absolute thrill, Dale. I'm glad you shared that with us. That had to be a whole lot of fun for you. I mean, these are some of your idols you're talking about here. From your early interest in these old time radio shows.
Yeah, back when I was just a wee lad.
Well, it's getting to be some time. We're getting a little long in the tooth. But we do, you know, we're of course exploring Mom's Thunderfick Weekend here tonight. But next weekend, we'll be kind of reading your mind. That's right, CBS Radio Mystery Theater on Friday night. They shall stone them with stones. Well, what else would you stone them with?
Well, that's a very biblical passage right there.
Yep, and then exploring tomorrow, telepath. Now we're going.
Yep.
We're sticking with the topic, but Saturday we got a special guest, Mike Arnett, who's bringing us his Twisted Tales of Terror. It's a brand new show. I mean, this gentleman created it himself and put it together, and we're going to share it here for a. It's a bit of a premiere.
As far as I know, this is where he's having it premiered on basically radio or internet anywhere. We're getting the opportunity to. He approached us about sharing this, and we both took a listen to it. I tell you what, it's an interesting program, a very clean recording, and an interesting character who is the host. We're going to hear a lot about him. He also hosted some movies for a local community channel as well, and I think that's the character he brought in to do this radio show. But it'll be a lot of fun, and it's always fun to hear how others that are out there today that still – pull out a radio show every now and then, you know?
Yeah, and we're lucky to be able to premiere it right here. Now, the following weekend, well, let me give you a musical hint as to our topic for that weekend.
Well, sometimes it gets exciting. Suppose we dig up a pencil and paper. I'll teach you some more tricks about the newspaper game.
Oh, that was such a nice movie. How about another one?
Oh, I don't know. Let me see what time it is. Oh, my gosh. Who created it?
Oh, come on, Dave. Just one more.
I really can't stay.
But, Davey, it's cold outside.
I got to go away.
But, Davey, it's cold outside.
This evening has been.
Been hoping that you drop
in. So very nice.
I'll hold your hand. Just like I
Mother will start to worry.
Now what's your hurry.
The father may be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace roar.
I really should scurry.
Oh, please don't hurry.
Well, maybe just a half a drink more.
Put some records on while I pour.
Neighbors might think.
But baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in this drink?
No Uber to be had out there.
Wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight
to
now.
Break this spell.
I'll take your cap, your hair looks well.
Gonna say no, no, no.
Mind if I'm moving closer?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
Really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Baby, it's cold outside.
You're not making this very easy, Holly.
I never said I would.
Simply must go.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The answer is no.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This welcome has been.
How lucky that you dropped
so
in.
Nice and warm.
Look out the window at that storm.
The cats will become suspicious.
Your lips look delicious.
My doggy will be there at the door.
Wake up on a tropical shore.
My nosy neighbor's pint is vicious.
Your lips are delicious.
Maybe just a cigarette and
more. Never such a blizzard before.
Got to get home.
But baby, you'd freeze out there.
Say, lend me a comb.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been grand.
I'm through when you touch
but
my hand.
Don't you see?
How can you do this to me?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong sorrow.
There seems to be plenty implied.
You got pneumonia and died.
I really can't stay.
Get over that old doubt.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Okay, I can stay for just one more drink.
That's what I like to hear.
Well, sadly,
oh,
folks...
and get the ceiling fan when you're done.
I really can't stay.
Song's over.
That's right. Our topic, baby, it's cold outside. I'll explain in a minute why this may be the last time you ever hear it on this show. Weekend after next... We got X minus one, A Pail of Air, Theater 5, Cold Storage, and an escape about an abominable snowman, plus CBS Radio Mystery Theater on Saturday, Ice Palace. But, baby, it's cold outside. No, Dave, the last time I played this, I got letters of complaint about mail. Yes, about mail abuse. This woman was clearly trying to get you drunk and be abusive. I've gotten letters from Mr. A. Bundy from the National Organization of Men Against Amazonian Masterhood, known as No Man. S. Farland sent me a note from the He-Man Woman Haters Club. S. McFarland.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, I'm getting all these letters from these organizations, and they're saying this is abusive towards men, so I don't know if we can play this anymore.
Well, you know, all I can say is if it were Holly, they wouldn't mind so much, but it's okay.
And now Holly has that show Cat Soup, is that correct?
No, that's Kathleen. That's my cousin, Kath.
Kathleen.
And you
one
performed
of our friends,
with her.
Kathleen has a radio show called Cat Soup. When I first heard about it, I thought maybe it was an Asian recipe show, but it's comedy.
It's the best of internet humor. She picks out a topic and then scours the internet for internet jokes on that topic, and then she and Joe Danko, who also work on our Weirdness Really Bad Movie show, they also they record these in a format that they have. It's usually right about 29 minutes long. It's a really fun time. They've done a lot of improv together. As a matter of fact, actually, Kathleen has started two different improv groups, and He joined in on the first one, and he followed her to the second one. And so we've done a lot of work together, so there's a very natural teaming of them together. So.
Yep. Now, I've worked with Kathleen before on your show, but I finally got to meet Joe Danko at the Goulardi Fest.
At the Goulardi Fest, yes.
Which was last October, and there's a second reason I brought that up, because coming up in February, we have a recording of Victoria Price. We're going to have a Victoria Price, or Vincent Price weekend, and a real great interview with Victoria Price. That's going to be our two Price for One weekend.
Yeah, it's really wonderful, because you do not get much more personal about someone than talking to their child or children. And she, even though her father was so much older when he had her, they had a very special relationship. And it's a really cool thing to hear these stories. She wrote a book about it. My wife, because of Victoria Price, actually probably had the best. We have been to every Goulardi Fest, every one. I've only participated in them the last 6-7 years, but we've been to every one because my wife is such a Goulardi fan, and I'm such a Houlihan and Big Chuck and Little John fan, so it really works out well. And she went and she listened to them, and she bought the book and got one of the last copies they had left there, and got to talk to her, and she hugged Victoria Price. And this will go down as one of my wife's very, of all these Goulardi Fests, this is a very favorite one of my wife's because of Victoria Price there. And what a wonderful interview she did there. So, and we're going to be able to share that with you tonight, that weekend. You know, it depends on how much we can get in.
That's nice, Dave. You're very fortunate. The only really good horror memory I have with Mrs. K is taking her to sit in Christine at one of the Horror Hound weekends. She loves Stephen King, and she got to sit in Christine. That was one of her big goals in life. So.
Okay. And it's pretty cool on that night. We're not going to hear the things we usually hear out of Vincent Price, which is, you know, a lot of either the Saint, or which I love, or one of suspenses. We've got three different shows, two of which we've never played before here. One is a favorite story that he starred in, and another one is in Philip Morris Playhouse, I think it is. Philip Morris Playhouse.
Mother needs an artist. Yeah.
And then an escape, and I think this may have been about the only escape episode that he did. There are three shows that we don't play a lot. Two we've never showed before, only because I kind of wanted to showcase them a little differently than we usually get to. I almost, because his daughter, and we'll hear this later, but one of her favorite roles of his was in the movie Laura, and Lux did that, and he did portray that part again in the movie. We'll do that for another drive-in sometime. A tremendous little murder mystery there. And you've just recently discovered that one, I think.
I did. I've seen it for the first time in 2018, probably about 5-6 months ago. Just found it floating around Roku, and I decided, well, Vincent Price, I got to watch this. And I've never seen this one before. I've read about it, heard about it, but I've never actually watched the movie. And it was a good tale, lots of excitement. And, of course, you got the great Vincent Price early in his career.
Yes. And we have a few minutes left. If you wanted to hit the jukebox or the wheel deal, we'd have a minute or so to do that.
Before we have the jukebox, though, we have a public service announcement.
Out from the coldest and darkest regions of the sea, as old as time itself, comes the most terrifying monster the world has ever seen. The Sea Creature! Slithering over the face of the earth came a monster from beyond the stars. Inhuman, indestructible, life on this planet was doomed when it conquered the world. These will be the strangest, most terrifying motion pictures you have ever seen. You will see monsters from a nightmare, the most horrifying creatures that ever made you wake up screaming. The she creature, and it conquered the world.
Cheap movies, cheap commercial. The she creature, and it conquered the world. Boy, two low-budget, trashy gems. Well, enough of that free stuff. Let's go on to the commercial jukebox. You got a nickel?
I don't get paid till next week, but I do have a virtual nickel right here for you. So just reach over and throw that into the slot. There we go.
Here's a message of importance to millions of people who are continually pale and washed out, weak and run down. Doctors will tell you that these conditions are often caused by a deficiency of iron, the iron you need to build healthy blood, to keep your body function properly, and to keep you physically fit and mentally alert. Ironized yeast tablets provide you with a simple and effective way to get the daily iron your body requires. Ironized yeast is a concentrated iron tonic combined with high-potency brewer's yeast, one of the natural sources of vitamin B1. And every daily dose of ironized yeast gives you more than your daily minimum iron requirement in a form your body can easily use and put to work. Of course, pallor and weakness can come from other causes, so see your doctor regularly. But medical studies show that 2 out of 3 women, particularly those between 15 and 50, and many, many men, lack sufficient iron. So if you're not getting the iron your body needs, if you feel weak, run down, and are easily upset, get new pep, vigor, and color for only a few pennies a day. Start taking ironized yeast tomorrow.
I don't know why that last commercial reminded me of my first wife, but that was a big go. That was a big deal back in the day. They were still pushing ironized yeast when I was a kid, and then all of a sudden they stopped talking about it altogether. I don't know why.
It's still out there, though. I didn't think it was. The guy said, I just went by the grocery store, and there it was. And so either he's going to 35-year-old grocery stores or else or it has one heck of a shelf life, one or the other.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe you want to read that packaging very carefully. Why is this package as big as a loaf of bread? I think the yeast grows a little bit there.
Because it's strong, because it's ironized. I really don't know what that means, but it doesn't really sound healthy. But
a lot of the early commercials I remember, iron being a big deal. I mean, elderly people or people with other certain issues, you got to drink the Geritol. You know, if you were a little anemic, drink the Geritol. It has iron.
Make every day count.
It wasn't just for old people. If you had an iron deficiency, drink Geritol. So everything was ironized.
Oh, yeah.
Turn us into damn robots.
Something else I didn't understand either, and that was the iodized salt. I have a friend who he was a volunteer, but he passed. But he grew up in Minnesota, and he said they used to, around school, like at lunch hour, they used to have to take iodine tablets. Why? Why don't we take them today? Because they put the iodine in the salt. And that way we don't have to take the tablets. I did not realize that.
Yes.
Strange, but true.
They're gonna have to start putting fluoride in bottled water, too, or all that, where we're going to look like a bunch of Europeans with their teeth falling out, you know? That was a horrible thing to say.
It was.
So I said it. We'll see you next time. Again, next weekend. We'll be reading your mind. Bye.
The castle lights. lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
You can't come alone, bring someone.
There we go.
Fill that little hole in there before the live show went off. So here we are in the after world.
Yeah, but no, it was for having about a 25-minute or 28-minute show onto a 90-minute show, I think we did okay.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Well, the little bonus features helped, and I love I love those. Incredible but True, Tales of the Frightened. Those are fun to stick in there when we have a show like this with maybe a short major feature and a little extra time so we can share more radio with our friends.
And that was neat that you found that particular one, which was, what was the name of that one that you found there for that? Fit right
Death
in with it?
Death of a Monster.
Ah, yes.
Incredible but true.
Incredible but true. But yeah, there's it's really fun when you get them to match up with the topic.
It is. Dave, you're incredible at it. All these shows you have plotted out for us. And don't worry, folks. Just because we have something written down, it isn't always written in stone. I think when we have a guest, things are written in stone. But really, if you have any kind of requests of stars you want to hear, particular shows you want to hear more of, maybe there's some you're not so fond of. Let us know. Doesn't mean we're going to do what you ask, but, hey, we still want to know.
Yeah, easiest way to get a hold of us is right on the Facebook at Erie House. There's a really easy way to get a hold of us right there.
Yeah, or you can reach out to me at my Dale K page. Whatevs. Reach out and touch someone. Touch me. Oh, God, that's gross.
Not me.
The shadow often has to fight bad guys, whether they're the Nazis, bank criminals, people with insane plots to take over the world. And today's story, it really had a supernatural edge. I mean, these were creatures that this dude made.
Yeah. It's really kind of interesting. I just think that the shadow is just so many different types of shows, and from you're right, from everyone from a bank robber to a supposed a monster of some kind, or a werewolf, or a zombie. You know, they went places that most of the other mystery type shows didn't go.
Yeah, it just seems like, it supported the era of mystery about him, too, because, again, he's one of the first superheroes ever, in a way, with his extra abilities. He picked that up in the Orient, you know.
Yeah, I did. Good thing you didn't put it back. We wouldn't have a story.
Yeah.
But, it's... When I was in junior high and started to listen to them, I loved them all. Then I kind of felt like, well, I really shouldn't like these. But it wasn't long before I really just started liking them all over again, because they are very well written, very well performed stories.
Yeah. It's funny, though, how, you know, he picked up his powers in the Orient, and they don't really say much more beyond that. What I think might be lost on young people today, listening to a story like this, is how much adventure and excitement and mystery was surrounding the countries from the East. We really didn't know much about China and Japan. you know, particularly the public at large, you know. China was a closed country for so long. And so you had...
In the movies, and then again, I don't. There were a couple of shows, especially I think there's a few more during the Orson Welles, like the Temple Bells of Nibon. You got a little bit more into some of the Eastern aspects of it, but once it went past Orson Welles, outside of mentioning it at the beginning of every episode, it really didn't seem to be a factor. Now, Orson Welles, a characterization of the Shadow, he also had the ability to, at times, or if he concentrated in a certain way, read people's minds itself, not only block their minds, but read them. He also had the ability to, transmit over a shortwave-type radio without a shortwave radio. That was one of the ways he could communicate with Margot when he was out being the Shadow. A lot of those conveyances kind of disappeared in even starting with Bill Johnstone, who was just directly after him. So it just we need to bring in some more of those. I think we've got – well, I've got some scheduled, but we need to bring some more of the Orson Welles one, because it was a different kind of a characterization. It was more sinister on purpose, and it was more – actually more taunting of the police – than what later ones were. Because later on, especially with the Brett Morrison ones, many times he was a friend of the police. And although they didn't know he was the Shadow, they just, let him tag along as an amateur criminologist. So he was able to tag along and things. So the Orson Welles as the first actual character Shadow, and not just like a narrator like the Whistler, which was the very first incarnation, radio incarnation of him. It's different than the others. So we need to bring in some more of those first-year Orson Welles episodes. But there's only just so much time. And I'm not sure if I lost Dale or not. Dale? While we see if Dale comes back, while we see if we can hit. There he goes. I think he's back there. His mic went off, and let's just, there he is. Dale! And I can't hear him. So, why don't we throw in a little bit of, see if we can get Dale back on track here. Let's do a Stan Freberg PSA while we get his mic back working again.
How did it happen again?
Well, I was driving down the freeway on my way to work watching this old Betty Grable movie.
Watching an old Betty Grable movie?
Yeah, on a little portable TV. I had it sitting up there in the dashboard.
I know,
but all of a sudden, this commercial comes on. The guy in a white coat says, "Now watch this amazing demonstration."
And?
I watched. Next thing I knew, pow!
Look, you can't watch television commercials while you commute.
I found that out.
You can't read a newspaper.
No.
The only thing you could do while you're driving is listen to the radio.
Yeah, well, that's all I intend to do, boy. Just as soon as I get out of traction.
Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring, or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million people.
Okay, Dale, you're back. Okay, I see Dale there, and I see him punching back and forth. It doesn't appear he's got a connection problem. Blog Talk's had this problem today, so hopefully I'm there. But what I'm going to do, since we can't get Dale on and the show is over, we're going to go ahead and, as we usually do, we'll say, good night, Jimmy. Or will we? I guess we won't do that either because the button is now working silly.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Make me a Sergeant Jackson food.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.